if you read the history, before Uganda was colonized by Britain or by England, people always fed on plant-based food. If you look at the story of the indigenous community, people used to gather their food from forests. They used to do agriculture and they used to collect their food. But actually, when the colonials came in, when people saw them consuming animal-based products or meat, people thought that it's a form of civilization. And actually, that has not changed here in Uganda. Many people here in Uganda believe that people who consume meat are those that are civilized. So we as advocates, it's our role to change that myth.
For nature.
For the ocean.
For people.
For animals.
Hello, lovely Sanus Planet community. It's really amazing again that you're here today with us in this podcast episode. And I have a really beautiful guest again today. Like always, I have so beautiful guests in this podcast. So I'm really, really grateful for that. And today I'm allowed to have a really nice chat with Kigundu Ronald Regan, a friend from Uganda. Kigundu, first of all, welcome to this podcast. It's amazing that you're here, that you take some time and share with us about your knowledge, about your work for this world. Thank you so much for that. And for everybody who does not know you yet, Kigundu is a really beautiful person that is doing a lot for animal advocacy, a lot for the climate, for nature protection. So he's the co-founder and team leader of Avakuganda. Avakuganda Org in Entebbe, Uganda, and he's the project coordinator at the African Liberty Foundation. So there are a lot of topics we can talk about today. First of all, I want to say thank you for being here. Welcome in the podcast, Kigundu. So beautiful that you're here.
Thank you very much. Many thanks for having me. It's a pleasure. I can't thank you enough for having on such an awesome platform.
Very cool. Very cool. Hey, first of all, I think it would be really nice that the people get to know you a little bit. Can you tell us a little bit about your background? I mean, those people who are watching this podcast on YouTube, they see the picture of you. They see that you're well-dressed. So probably you are kind of at work. You have to go somewhere and working. So what is your background? What do you do? Where do you come from? And why did you become the co-founder and coordinator of these beautiful projects? And how did that happen? Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
I'm Kigundu Ronald Regan. I'm a Ugandan. And I'm a clinical officer by profession. Though I do facilitate as a teacher in the numerous projects that I do. I'm the co-founder and team lead of Action for Vegans and Climate. You can call it AVAC. And I'm also the project coordinator at African Liberty Foundation. The major reason why I started this organization, basically influenced with my career that I took. Personally, I'm a medical practitioner. And during the numerous outreaches we had in the community, we saw an increase in number of lifestyle diseases, the likes of diabetes and hypertension, obesity among the populations. And adopting a plant-based diet is one of the remedies. And actually, in some years back, I lost my dad on basics or on grounds of diabetes. So it further pushed me to dive deep into advocating for plant-based systems or plant-based food diet. Another reason is I love animals, and I feel so offended when I see someone treating animals in an immune or a cruel manner. So that's why I advocate for animals. But basically, I've volunteered at numerous organizations here in Uganda. Like I volunteered at Love for All Foundation. I volunteered at Vegan Planet Africa. I volunteered at Uganda Vegan Society and Vegan Harmony. There are so many organizations that I have volunteered, and they are advancing plant-based food system, and they're promoting compassion. But actually, they are working in specific regions. So when I went back to my area in Entebbe, I said, no, we also need to create change in the community that I come from. So that influenced my decision to start or to co-found such a high impact organization in my area. So those are some of the reasons that that influenced me to start that organization. Nevertheless, we also have another question on climate. We have another question on climate that is quite on a rise in my area. And actually, I'm here in my community promoting a notion where that people should work with nature rather than against it. That informs why we are so rooted in the nature-based solutions for climate change. Yes.
There are so many topics inside that you talk about. First of all, you have a medical background somehow, right? So did I understood that right? Can you explain the medical background? What are you doing in the medical world? What is your what did you learn there, or what have you done in the medical topic? What, how would you call that so that people understand this connection as well?
In the medical world, I did a diploma in clinical medicine and community health from Kampala International University. And basically here we are more in preventive care or preventive remedies. Mm-hmm. You know, we always educate communities on how they can prevent themselves from conducting specific diseases rather than curing them. So we are basically rooted in a public health, where we educate communities on what they should eat to prevent themselves from conducting or getting certain diseases that may be costly to them to treat them. Though we also do the treatment, but actually I'm not basically in the treatment. I'm basically in public health, where I educate masses on what they should do to prevent themselves from contacting diseases. Are more in the prevention rather than the curing.
That is really cool, because that's one of the most important topics in medical care, that you are preventing your body from becoming sick instead of waiting until it's sick and then later try to fight against it, right? So it's really, really important what you do. Thank you so much. And as you said, you are helping people to prevent becoming sick by diet change or by thinking about what you eat. How you mentioned your dad died because of diabetes. How is your knowledge, or how is your input that you, if you want to share, what could help people, or why does veganism, plant-based food, can help people in the topics of diabetes? So if they prevent already and eat some certain things that help them to be healthy, what are these topics about, or what are the risks when people eat this normal, typical, I would say, European diet as well, which is quite heavy, full of animal products? Why is it not so great for the body?
Of course, animal-based diet contains cholesterol, and cholesterol is not healthy for our bodies, especially the heart. Unlike the plant-based diet that are cholesterol-free. And if you look at the diabetes that mostly is on the rise here in Uganda, it's the other type 2 diabetes, not the type 1. The one that is insulin non-dependent, the one that is caused by poor health or eating too much food that are not healthy to your body. The reason why I campaign or I say people should not adopt an animal-based diet is the cholesterol that is found in animal-based products, unlike plants. So we see that most of the people here in Uganda are consuming animal-based diet in search for proteins. And through our education, our education programs, we show them the alternatives or the protein alternatives. We tell them, look, if you're looking for proteins, you can get proteins from soya, you can get proteins from beans, you can get proteins from peanuts. So we show them the alternative sources of proteins that are good for their body. Because if you look at overconsumption of animal-based products can drive obesity. Obesity. And actually, obesity is caused by, it can lead to decomposition of all fats in the blood vessels. And actually, when these blood vessels are having a lot of fats on them, it will increase the blood pumping pressure. Blood will be moving at a high pressure, but it is passing into a small passage, what I can call a small passage, because it is so many fats have been deposited on the walls of those veins and arteries and the capillaries. So that will drive to hypertension and diabetes. But the question of diabetes is more of a diet. We have another type of diabetes that we cannot control, the type one that is caused by genetic factors. And actually, science has not proved its major cause. But actually, we prevent this diabetes that is more of that, where you need to watch your diet to prevent yourself from contracting it.
So that's really important. I got to know when I became vegan, I really experienced myself. I did not become vegan because of my health. That was the last reason what I was looking for, I have to say. My first reason was animals and the environment, the ocean. But then after a few years of being vegan, I discovered so many benefits body-wise that I was really even positively shocked how much it's changing, while I was not even focusing on just eating healthy vegan. I was focusing on eating vegan, but I started to become more and more focused at some point eating healthy vegan, because even vegan products can, there are some vegan products that are not healthy, of course. So there is a big difference, right? What people sometimes have to first get to know about. How do you feel in your countries, for example? How is it when people are used to eat animal products and then they find out, maybe there is another way to eat for my health, but also for the animals? How do you feel is this change happening? Do you reach the people, or is it quite hard that the people listen to you? What is your experience with that?
Absolutely, people listen to us when we educate them, because when we are designing our theory of change as an organization, we looked at so many ingredients that can help us to achieve our vision. One is animal-based products are expensive, compared to plant-based products. And Uganda is a poor country. So if you tell people that you can get proteins from consuming soya, the same protein that you can get from meat, people find it welcoming, because the masses are not well economical. And another reason is Uganda is an agricultural country. 80% of the households in Uganda survive on agriculture for a living. So they have food in plenty. If you educate them on the significance of adopting a plant-based diet, it's like you just catalyzing, because they already have food in plenty. And those are some of the reasons why it has been easy for us to realize change in a short while. Those are some of the basic or the pillars that we've been on, or that have supported us to realize or to achieve our goals.
This sounds really interesting. If I think about the background, like Uganda is really a poor country. You cannot compare it with place where I live. It's quite a rich country. Doesn't mean that every person is rich, but the country itself is quite rich. And I think somehow, which is weird, but somehow it's sometimes easier also to maybe reach the people that about, the economic backgrounds as well, to show, hey, there is a possibility to eat different, which makes yourself healthier or keeps yourself healthier, but helps you also with them saving money. In my country, sometimes it's the opposite, which is really crazy, that animal products are so cheap, and vegetables sometimes, not always, sometimes are in comparison not just cheap, sometimes quite, not that they are more expensive than animal products, but there is not sometimes not such a big difference. And then the people have this argument of, whoa, but the vegetables are so expensive. So that makes it hard for people sometimes to think about maybe it's better to eat some vegetables. But when we look about the background and the long-term impact in your health, then it is definitely also cheaper because if you buy animal products and at some point, because you consume so many of them and maybe because you consume the cheap, crazy, fast produced animal products, then at some point you might get sick because the stuff is really unhealthy. And then later you have to spend a lot of money for a doctor and you cannot enjoy your life because you're getting sick. Like there are so many long-term things that can happen according to your diet, whatever you choose. It's changing something in the long term. You might then need a lot of money as well. I heard once, this is a question to you that might be interesting. I have a friend in South Africa and she was writing a book about veganism with some friends in Africa, in South Africa, vegan chefs there. And she said, it's interesting. They made the cookbook to talk about that it is possible to have a plant-based dish for only 75 cents that gives you all the nutrients you need. And she told me in many places in Africa, there are really like many people that are poor. They cannot even afford high price food. And when they also, before the Europeans came, the most African people did not eat so much animal products, right? Is this true? And then Europeans came and bring all of this junk food and all of this stuff. That was also the time when the people in Africa started to become sick because they started to adapt on a European diet that is just not the healthiest one. And that in the end bring people that already have struggles with financial crisis, bring them also to the point to become sick. And then the health crisis came on top of it. Would you say that's true? Would you say that Africa normally was much more plant-based before all of the colonization stuff happened? And how is your point on that?
Absolutely, I agree with you. Actually, if you read the history, before Uganda was colonized by Britain or by England, but actually before the coming of the colonialists or the British, people always fed on plant-based foods. They used to gather. If you look at the story of the indigenous community of the Baganda or the Bantu, where I come from, people used to gather their food from forests. They used to gather fruits. They used to do agriculture, and they used to collect their food. But actually, when the colonials came in, they brought civilization here in Uganda, and actually, when people saw them consuming animal-based products or meat, people thought that it's a form of civilization. And actually, that norm has not changed here in Uganda. Many people here in Uganda believe that people who consume meat are those that are well off, are those that are civilized. So we as advocates, it's our role to change that notion or to change that myth that is still running in many people's brains. But actually, I strongly agree with you that yes, at a larger extent, the influence that of so many people, because they bought civilization, and many people think that what our former masters or our former colonialists that they were what they were doing is a form of civilization, and people opted for it so that they can rhyme with them.
It's interesting how much these myths are taking over the roots sometimes. I think when probably that might be something what you're doing as well, back to the roots, no? Back to the African roots, eat the things that are from here, that grow here on our land and that we can produce ourselves without having to kill thousands of animals every day. But the stuff that we grow in our own country, that is the food that is always the best for our body as well. Food for me is the most important food for me would be the food that grows in my area. That is the healthiest for my body. So I think that that is a back to the roots kind of thing that could maybe also make people a bit like help them a little bit, like thinking about, oh, where do we come from? Maybe it makes sense to go back to our own roots and do well how we did before and consume less of the things that publicity wants to tell us to do, because the whole world is a bit messed up with all of this animal agriculture. And yeah, I think that that's a big point. Let's talk a little bit about your organizations. So as the co-founder and team leader of Abakuganda, what is your job there? What so that's kind of mainly the outreach topics about veganism, about plant-based. You organize a lot of projects, like for example African Vegan Restaurant Week. I love it, it's so cool. In my hometown there are not so many vegan restaurants, really not, so it's hard for me to go out. I barely go out eating because it's boring. I prefer cooking myself. Or you also do the vegan festival and diet change outreach. How does your day look like? You're teaching as well, but then you go to make outreach and to organize all of these festivals. I mean, that's a lot what you have on your agenda. Tell me a little bit about your work there.
Absolutely. I have a test schedule always, but actually I'm just committed to what I believe in. I love the quote from your book that really inspired me to further do what I love. You know, there's a certain quote from the book that emphasizes us to always embrace passion when you are taking a career. My day or my week is quite busy because I'm also a board member on the top body that makes decisions of the organization. I sit there, though I'm not the head of the board. So we always have what we call quarterly meetings, where we discuss strategies. We look at our strategic plan. We have a five-year strategic plan. We look at our action plans. Have we really achieved them? So, and actually, I'm also responsible for implementing the strategies or the outputs or the objectives in our strategic plan. Basically, my day is always quite tight because I do facilitate, but actually once in a week, there is an institute called Effective Altruism, where we teach people how they can do good, how they can make good better. So I'm a facilitator there, but actually I do facilitate it once. On Monday to Tuesday, Wednesday, I'm doing organization work. Basically, I may be writing reports, having meetings with prospectors, individuals who may want to join our team. I do hope in writing the proposals of the organization, because we don't have that staff. We currently rely on volunteers and one project coordinator. So most of the task or most of the work, I'm the one responsible for doing it. And the other days from Thursday, Friday, Saturday, I'm always in the community doing numerous outreaches. And this Saturday, I'm also having an outreach. And next Saturday, I'll be having an outreach. And actually, I'm also on what we call media outreaches. I'm on media, I'm in media houses. I'm on different media houses trying to advocate for change. Basically, that's my schedule. Yeah.
Sounds busy.
I tend to rest on Sunday. On Sunday, I tend to rest, and then the schedule resumes.
Nice.
Sounds, I do some laundry, everything on Sunday.
I can hear that you're very passionate about your topics and about what you're working on. And I so agree. I work a lot, sometimes maybe a bit too much. Sometimes I should take a bit of time off, and maybe you should do that too, to take a bit of time for yourself. to restore energy. But it's so important when you really are so much convinced about what you do and you love what you do and what you stand for, then you want to share your values. You want to inspire people with it. And that's what you do. And I love it. Thank you so much for that. You also have a project I saw on your homepage that is a Liberate the Hens program. So it's about promoting free range farming systems over battery cage production. This is really interesting. And that's, I think, a beautiful way to show people also that every step towards a better life for the animals is a step forward. It's not about just telling everybody you're not allowed to eat eggs, but it's about helping people to understand the way we produce it now, it's horrible. And there are other ways we have to change. We can do it step by step. And because of doing that, people also start to be more connected again to the animals, to nature. That might at some point make a little bit of the feeling to the people that they say, oh, maybe I want to eat in general less eggs, or I want to leave the animals alone. But the first step, like to leave the animals alone from today to tomorrow, will not happen. People are so far away from the connection to animals. So first of all, we have to show there are different ways we can produce that is less bad for the animals and for the environment and for health. And then people adopt that and start to see, yes, it's true. So how does that program work? Are you also doing outreach for this Liberate the Hens program? Or how do you show people that there are other ways of producing eggs?
Thank you very much. The program is quite big. One, we are going to first begin with petitioning the Constitutional Court. Because if you look at the current, we want to use the law to help animals. If you look at the current law, that the animal prevention or the Cruelty Prevention Act, it was enacted in 1957. I think when Uganda was still under in the hands of the British or the English people. And actually, time has passed on. The law, I don't want to say it's outdated, but actually we have so many things that have really evolved. There is social media, we have, there is evolution of new means of transport. So, and actually, if you look at the law is not detailed. It does not define birds as animals. Mm-hmm. I did some bit of science, and in science, we have what we have the five kingdoms of living things. That's Animalia, Plantae, Monella, Bacteria, and then the Protista. But actually, if you look at kingdom Animalia, it has different phylum. Yeah, we have the Reptalia, the Mammalia. We have the birds. And actually, from the phylum, you go to the class order until you reach the species. So if you look at the law, it does not define that. So one, begin with petitioning the Constitutional Court, and they further defined the law to give it meaning. And actually, also in my area, want to petition the municipal council, you know, to move policies that will help in what? In proper keeping of birds. You know, you can move policies. If you look at here in Uganda, districts or local governments, they have that liberty of enacting bylaws, you know, if a law does not challenge the supreme law of the land or the law that was passed by the parliament. So they are able to make bylaws. So this program, after petitioning the Constitutional Court and petitioning the municipal council, we shall also educate farmers on how they can keep birds in a free-range system. They say that if you look at the research from Animal Advocates Africa, it showed that people tend to keep birds in cages because they don't want them to contact diseases. Because we have Newcastle as one of the most dangerous diseases if it comes to poultry life here in Uganda. So we want to partner or to cultivate partnership with the veterinary organization here in Uganda to educate farmers on how they can prevent their birds to contact from Newcastle and any other related illness. So we shall go on TV because it's mass communication. I believe that TV is more, it can communicate more compared to TV and radio. They can communicate more compared to social media. Because if you look at the statistics by the recent statistics by the, it's called the census we had, the recent statistics show that 90% of Ugandans have radios. And actually, a small portion of Ugandans have smartphones. So if you want to reach out to quite a large number of people, you can't leave out radios because they are listened and actually they are reliable. And also TV. Though most of the areas in Uganda don't have electricity, but actually 60% of the location here of Uganda is covered with electricity. So we can't also tap into that market. We do the education. But basically the project is about using the law to protect hens. Because the reason why I also focus on that project, but I've been left out. We've seen so many organizations that have worked on welfare of other animals like the fish. I had my colleague Julius. He had a wonderful project. It was about marine life on Lake Victoria, and it was really successful. And actually, we've not had any organization that has come up to help the birds or the hens. And actually, if you look at the statistics by the Ministry of Agriculture, it shows that birds are the most rare animals in Uganda. And then they come, we shall have fish coming number two, the cows, goats, and then rabbits and other animals. But actually, they take the top position of the most rare animals in Uganda. But actually, we don't have an organization that has come directly to advocate for their well-being. And that informed our decision to move such a project. And we believe that the outcomes will be both quantitative and qualitative. If you look at the outputs we listed in our proposal, and we believe people will get to know about why they should leave birds to move in a free-range system. Actually, just take a scenario. We human beings, if we are used to be put in a small cell, you know, you don't move, but if you are put in a small cell, you are just fed with only food, but if you are in a small cell, you don't have that liberty of moving from one place to another. You don't have that liberty of doing exercise. I think it can't be, life can't be good. Life can't be awesome as it is when we are enjoying the liberty of moving from one place to another. And actually, another reason why we came for that project, I was reading a certain report by it's called Animal Charitable Waiters. It showed that birds that tend to live in cages, they tend to have diseases that affect their feet because they don't move. They are just static. So they tend to have diseases that affect their feet. So it is also another remedy to address the question of the health of birds. So those are some of the reasons.
It's so, when we look at things and when we look at the pictures, when we really, really open up to see the reality, how birds or hens in this case are held in cages, or even at other animals, pigs and cows, how small the space is, how little they can move or none at all, then I think the people who are thinking a bit, looking behind the scenes, thinking a little bit about it, they don't even want to eat these animals or products from these animals. But because normally we should see this is sick. What we do to the animals is making them sick. And how can the product that comes then from these animals make us healthy? How should that happen? That's not possible. We pass on the sickness that we put on the animals. We pass it on to ourselves again. So in the end, we create a crazy pain in this world, and that falls back to us. That is the pure logic. That is also, you can call it maybe, I don't know, what you send out in the world, it comes back to you somehow. So what we send out right now is a lot of animal abuse, a lot of pain for the animals. And how should it be different that this comes back to us? I mean, it's, of course, it's normal logic. So why shouldn't we? If we are selfish and think only about ourselves, then it's the first reason why we should take care of animals better and give them a better life. Just if we do it from the selfishness out for ourselves, because it makes us self sick to eat animal products this way. And if we look further, of course, we want to support animals. You and me know that. Many people maybe don't think so much about the animals, then they think about themselves. But even from selfishness, it would be pure logic to make a better life for animals. Other question about the African Liberty Foundation. That's the other organization you are a project coordinator of. Can you tell me a little bit about that organization? What are you doing there? Because I know that you are also promoting individual rights and empowerment of marginalized populations. That's a big topic for you. Is that mainly also the part of what you do with the African Liberty Foundation?
Basically, that's what I do at the African Liberty Foundation. I'm just a volunteer there. But actually, it's more in civil liberties, economic empowerment for human beings, and basically that's it. That more in economic empowerment and civil liberties. I mean, the right of human beings. So that's basically what they do. And actually, they are more in strategic litigation, research, and retool programs.
Very cool.
Yes. I just hope them in executing their projects, because I love to volunteer. I love to create change in my community. I have so many other organizations that I volunteer, but actually for African Liberty Foundation, it is formal. They gave me a certain sort of contract as a volunteer, but the other organization, I'm just volunteering when I'm called that, Chigun, we have a project here. We may need your services. And then you come in and you provide them with your services. But for African Liberty Foundation at the moment, I'm still taking up the position. When the organization grows, I think they will deploy some new human resource to take up the role.
Nice.
But actually, I love volunteering. That's it.
Very cool. I see a lot in the world that people that are starting to care for animals much more, they also, of course, care for everyone in this world, because it's everybody has rights and the rights should be improved. And I love that. Let's go a little bit back once more. How did you even go vegan? When and why? I mean, you did not, probably you haven't been born. I mean, you have been born as a vegan. You just drank the milk of your mother, but that was it. But at some point, the civilization made you probably also eat animal products. That's what we all faced. You probably haven't been a vegan your whole life long, right? How did you get there that you made the choice to become vegan now? What was the moment, or did there something happen? Was it the story with your father, or was it already before? What was the reason, the big reason where you said, no more, that's it. I don't want to support animal products. I don't want to eat them.
I was not born a vegan, but I was born a vegetarian. When I was young, whenever I could taste meat and milk, my body could respond with some allergic conditions. You know, I could develop rashes all over my body. So for that long time, and I couldn't eat meat and milk. So my mom thought that it was not normal, and she had to use any form of medicine to see that my body does not react when I take those products. But actually, it all failed out. Whenever I could test, I could develop allergies. My body could respond negatively. So I moved on. But actually, I could go with, and I could use other and more products. But actually, when my dad passed on, cut us off diabetes, and I really became an ethical vegan, an anarchist. I became an extreme vegan because my dad cut us off diabetes, and if you look at the post-mortem report from the hospital, it had led to destruction of the internal body organs, you know, and they couldn't function very well. And I said, I'm a poor man. If I contract such an illness, how will I sponsor myself? So I became vegan for my home.
Mm-hmm.
And we have, and actually the other question of animals came in. I love pets. And if you come at home, if you come at in Uganda, you see that I have a kitten, a cat at home. We call it Success. And we also have a puppy. Yeah. So I'm compassionate about animals. And I look offended, or I feel offended if I see someone treating it in equal, in an inhuman manner. So I took up the role to advocate for the well-being of animals. Mm-hmm. And lastly, another reason why I decided to become an ethical vegan, if you look at the question of environment here in Uganda, we have so many crises brought on by environment. Because recently, we had flash floods on Lake Victoria that led to displacement of people, that led to outbreak of waterborne diseases. We've had drought in the northern part of the country that has led to famine, malnutrition among people. It has led to water shortage. If you look at the eastern part of the country, we had landslides that led to thousands of people to die. But actually, if you look at the theory of change, my theory of change as a person, adopting a vegan lifestyle can help to mitigate these effects of climate change. So basically, those informed my decision to become a vegan. And not forgetting being a medical practitioner, you cannot tell people, if you look at a person, I have my core value. And one of my core values is lead by example. You know, you can't tell a person, you can't tell a patient to adopt a plant-based diet for his health, yet you, the person, you are not doing what you are saying. So I need to walk the talk. I need to be an example of what I'm saying in the community. So those decisions influenced my path of being a vegan, and I don't regret.
I can say the same. I feel so much. When you are saying something to other people, you have to first show it yourself. You have to be the example. And also there, you can not just be an example, but help people to realize it's possible. And it's not even that hard. And it's even beautiful and very cool. And you feel healthy and you feel strong. And there's so many benefits from showing it by example. We get a little bit close to the end of this podcast. I have two more questions. What is your vision of the future? I mean, what is your goal for this year and for your organizations and everything you would like to achieve? And what is your long-term goal?
Our strategic plan as an organization defines or dictates my vision or my goals of 2025. It's quite big, but actually, if I want to break it into the action plan of this year too, because we've passed year one was 2024, year two will be 2025. One, I want to reach out to 10 universities, and I educate over 1,000 students on the significance of adopting a plant-based diet, and I want to open up vegan chapters in those schools. I want to petition the Constitutional Court, you know, on the question of the animal, the Prevention of Cruelty Act, you know, that falls under our policy reform program. We want to influence two policies, at least two policies, you know, to change. I want to reach out to schools, at least 10 of them, and I educate the students on the significance of advocating, on the significance of adopting a plant-based diet. I want to reach out in schools. I want to reach out to at least 2,000 students, because I want to visit schools that have a minimum of 200 students. Mm-hmm. And then I want to visit at least 2 radio stations and 2 TV stations to educate the community about how there is the significance of treating animals in a human way and the significance of adopting sustainable food systems. And I estimate to reach out to at least 1 million people, courtesy of the statistics from the Uganda Bureau of Statistics that show that most of the population here in Uganda have a radio and TV. And community outreaches, of course, at least 10 of them. And I want to reach out to at least 1,000 people spreading the message. And this time I want to go in the western part of the country, because 2024 was more in the eastern part and the central region. Of course, I can't forget research. I need to publish a paper. Academia, because I do cooperate with academic institutions. You know, research is essential in influencing policy reform. So I need at least 1 research paper published singly, or we can partner with like-minded individuals or organizations. And still on our workshops, we want to have at least 5 workshops with policymakers to influence change. And in workshops, I group workshops as summits and conferences. So 5 confirmed. I'll be in Kenya for the AVA summit. That's a success. I'll be with whoever a summit with the National Planning Authority of Uganda when they are having their 5-year strategic plan. I also have our inputs there to see that the rights and welfare of animals are catered for in the 5-year strategic plan of Uganda. So workshops, basically, that's it. Those are some of my action plans of 2025. And the question of the environment, I have not talked about it. I want to plant at least 5,000 trees where they have been cut. And we shall realize this by partnering with Rotary Uganda. It's a big organization. They have a campaign called the Rotary Earth Initiative. And we've worked with them before. We are going to work with the office of the former vice president of Uganda and also the senior presidential advisor on environment and sanitation to plant most trees. We have a partnership by MOU with them. So we shall work with them again. And plastic bottles, as well as the other project I showed to you, where we are promoting reusing of plastic bottles, because they can't ban plastics in Ghana. Because if you look at the companies manufacturing plastics, they're owned by the people in the state. And actually, they tend to make a lot of profits. So we are more on the reusing and reducing. You know, those 2 R's of reduce, reuse, and repurpose. So we can't wait to give plastics more value so that people can use them in agriculture. We saw an initiative where one of our colleagues were using them in decoration. So we shall also go there for the environment. to reuse more plastics or to give it more purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And another output is we have what we call the plant powered festive campaigns. For example, here 70%, I can say 90% of the population have faith-based or have faith or religion they are affiliated to. And those religions celebrate some days. For example, the Christians have the Easter celebrations that will be coming in April. They have the Christmas. The Muslims have the Eid. So we want to use those celebrations to advocate for adoption of plant-based recipes and treating of animals in an human way, or to end cruelty towards animals. So we want to use those festive seasons when people are alert, when people are in mood. So those are some of our objectives in our strategic plan. And actually, I forgot to talk about the theme. Last year, our theme was Light Up Compassion. It was the theme. But actually, this year, we've not decided the theme. We're going to have a meeting with the board on the end of Jan, and then we shall come up with the theme of 2025. So those are some of our goals. And the common vision of our vision is a world where people adopt a plant-based diet for their health, for the animals, and then for the planet or environment. So that's our vision, our long-term vision.
Sounds really great. I love that vision. And I will do what I can to support you guys as well with my knowledge or with my information or whatever I have experienced in my life. So we will stay in touch with you, that's for sure. And the last question today, Kigundu, do you see positive changes happening? And do you have hope for the future? And do you see also the possibility of our Sanus app, for example, to give or create part of this hope and to help the people also in Uganda? How do you see that?
Absolutely. The future is bright. That's what I can tell. People are responding positively to change. The question was about ignorance. People are ignorant about this information. They don't know the fact. So if you reach out to people and teach them the real fact, they are really receptive. For the Sanus app, they are really doing a great job, you know, in amplifying change. The challenges that we do face here in Africa is funding, limited funding. As we say that the country is poor, so many companies are not engaged in the social corporate responsibility. They're not engaged into those activities because most of the companies are owned by, I can call them international citizens from the other country. And actually they are focused on maximizing profits. But after if SANS comes up with an initiative where they say that we shall provide a platform where people can buy and sell their products, and then the profits are invested in impacting the community, it's really awesome. I've reached out to numerous companies here in Uganda, calling them on to use the app. But basically, most of our companies have not formalized the form of payment. We are in the transition from into the cashless economy. Most of the businesses that I engage with, they are using cash money. So we first need to transform into the cashless economy. And then such innovations like the Sanus app will be a great initiative. And I can tell that we are not yet we're not going to be there. We shall be there because we're also advocating for the cashless economy. When that's the other wing of the African Liberty Foundation, you know? So that's one of the challenges we are facing right now. Most of the businesses here in Uganda that are owned by Ugandans, for these Ugandans, you can reach out to them. They're not yet formal. They don't have a board, the top organization that takes decisions. Most of them are separate proprietorships. They're owned by an individual. They're partnerships. They're like three people had a dream and set up a company. So you can reach out to them. But they have not yet transitioned to the cashless economy. But I hope we are there because that's the future. A cashless economy is the future.
Thank you so much. That makes me very happy because we are also looking for helping wherever we can. So we will see how we can help in your country as well and how we can connect better. Thank you so much for everything that you shared today with us. And I'm really grateful for your work and for your dedication of all of these topics. Thank you so much, Kikundu, for your time as well. And thanks, everybody, for listening today. And like the podcast, share the podcast, invite your friends to listen to it. Thank you so much for helping us to share this message with the world. And Kikundu, we stay in touch. And everybody who was listening today, thank you. And see you at the next podcast in about 2 weeks. Thank you, guys. Bye.
Bye. Have a nice day.